Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Tim Hughes, welcome back to Australia and welcome to Open House.
Hey, thank you. Great to be here.
Son of an Anglican vicar.
Yep.
Tell me about your childhood, and obviously you were around the things of faith right from an early age.
Yeah. I loved growing up in the church. I know lots of kind of pastors' kids or vicars' children have different experiences. I think the church... you know, it's quite an all-consuming place, especially if your father leads it. You know, lots of people to pastor and see. But actually, no, for me, it was a really positive thing, and my parents were amazing at modeling faith in Jesus but giving me space to discover it for myself. You know, ultimately, Christianity is a decision you have to make to accept Jesus into your heart. And so I remember when I was 11, really, I guess that would be the moment I look back and think that was... when I really decided, yeah, I believe, and this is for me. Hmm. And, you know, I've sort of never looked back. I've loved all that I've been able to be involved in and learn and see. And I look back with great sort of fondness on my youth, really.
Hmm. And what was the moment where you actually clicked and said, right, I can actually write songs. I can actually play music. I can sing.
Well, I mean, it was a journey. I think it was that same time when I was 11, when I gave my life to the Lord. I was at an event, and there's sort of a gathering of a few thousand people, and I remember in the worship and the music just being so amazed to see people not singing to God or just singing random words or melodies, but it was something that came from the depths of their heart. It was like the relationship, you know, that sense of, man, these are love songs, really. And I went back wanting to learn the guitar so that I could just worship like that and sing like that in my room. So I spent, you know, quite a few years picking it up because I'm not the most natural musician. I would just spend hours in my room singing, worshiping. And then I guess it came a point where I was tired of singing everyone else's songs, and I wanted to sing my own songs and find my own words and my own expression. And that's where the seeds for kind of wanting to write songs began. Mm. Again, it was a whole process. I think if I was to say one word that would sum up songwriting for me, it'd be perseverance.
Is that right?
Yeah, that it's hard work. You have this moment of inspiration, this idea, but actually to take that and shape it into a song that's either something other people can sing or has something fresh to say is a real challenge. It doesn't come easily.
Yes, the old inspiration, perspiration.
Exactly.
10% inspiration, 90% perspiration.
Yeah, totally.
Working on it.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. Actually crafting it. That's really what being a craftsman is about, or a craftsperson.
Yeah, and I think we kid ourselves, you know, to think that, you know, some people who write these amazing songs just sort of roll out of bed and pick up a guitar and bang, off they go. You know, I'm amazed reading, you know, whether it's the Beatles or Paul Simon takes months, you know, labouring over his words and lyrics and melodies. And I think, you know, the more investment we put in, the more time, energy, obviously the output's often going to be greater. So I think if you feel called to writing songs or passionate about it, it's something we really need to devote ourselves to, you know, just it's more than just a feeling or a moment. It's a skill, it's a craft, it's you know, something to invest in.
Tell me then a little bit about your creative process then.
Yeah.
Walk me through it. I mean, what do you do when you pick up the guitar, sit at the piano or whatever? How do you work your craft?
Well, I think I've been discovering creativity, like all things in life, is often seasonal. There'll be moments where you feel really inspired, lots of ideas. And if I'm in that place, I try and just create as much time as possible. But the other time, there's those moments where, you know, you have that writer's block, just nothing comes to mind. And sometimes the best thing you can do in that time is just to sort of almost put the guitar down and not worry about writing songs. Just get inspired again. You know, I think songs flow from inspiration. So maybe it's reading a book, watching some movies, going for walks, listening to a whole bunch of new albums, conversations, and eventually something will just stir up again. And I've also learned the need for kind of the discipline side of, you know, I try and set aside... one day a week, Wednesdays, to be creative. Just good to have that day set aside for, you know, reading, writing, thinking, space. I've been doing a lot more co-writing, which has also helped because, you know, bringing ideas and sharing with others is really exciting. So I think there's no one size fits all. It's not, you know, you've just got to know how you operate and create time.
Yes.
But also be disciplined, you know.
Work on it.
Yeah.
So it was 19 years old, I think you were, when you started performing worship songs for the Soul Survivor conferences.
Yeah.
Then you went into a pastoral role, a church role in Soul Survivor Church.
Yeah.
And now you've gone to Holy Trinity Brompton.
Yeah.
Well known around the world for the Alpha Course with Nikki Gumbel, etc. Yeah. Somebody was saying to me actually just today, and they were saying, wow, I really appreciate the move that he's actually made in that regard, because he's actually gone to a church after he's sung at these huge conferences. The idea almost being that you'd probably just go to being the worship leader for a larger conference and a larger conference and a larger conference and a larger conference. You've actually gone to back into the church environment. But tell me about that move to Holy Trinity.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting because Soul Survivor, you know, the conference is obviously fairly well known. And I mean, there's a church in Watford as well. But they're very good friends with Holy Trinity Brompton, HDB. And Mike Pilavarci and Nikki Gumbel have always been good friends. And so at Soul Survivor, I was always doing stuff with HDB. And then I think Nikki was really keen. He became the leader, the vicar, and was keen to move the worship on and was speaking to Mike about it. And Mike said, well, look, if God's in it, why don't you have a chat with Tim and just see? And, you know, it's one of those timing things that God, I think, really spoke to my wife and I. We actually had 2 months sabbatical out here in Sydney and just space to pray about it. And because it was a big step, you know, something that was so much our home and family in Soul Survivor to move on. But for us, we felt really passionate, as you said, about local church. I think if I want to have any integrity, if I, you know, write songs that will connect with the church, then that will only come from being really plugged in locally. And so that felt like a really good thing to do. And it's an amazing church to learn from. I mean, you really are surrounded by some of the most phenomenal leaders. And, you know, Nikki Gumbel, this Alpha Course, you know, it's been done by over 15 million people. It's in countless countries. And just seeing the way he's shaped that has been very inspiring. And I guess the big thing as well about us going to HDB was to also start a school of worship called Worship Central. And it felt like that would be a really good base to train other worship leaders. You know, imagine if every church had a gifted, humble, thoughtful, creative, worshipful sort of worship pastor. You know, the church would just be buzzing, coming alive and just falling more and more in love with Jesus. And so really, we're just trying to find ways to train people. And we do events. You know, we've been really trying to draw on some amazing theologians like N.T. Wright and others who can really help shape our thinking when it comes to worship. And we also have a website, online resources, worshipcentral.org, with a whole bunch of videos, podcasts, training, new songs. It's keeping me busy.
Absolutely.
It's exciting.
Exciting stuff. So it sounds like you're in your element. I mean, you're in your company.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whether
really
it be writing or creativity or actually training other people.
Yeah. And actually, I always find, you know, when you train others, you are forced to grow so much yourself.
Yeah.
You know, when you have to try and talk to others, and you know,
you can't lead where you haven't been before.
Exactly. So it really keeps you sharp, and I've been learning so much myself.
Mm-hmm. Question out of left field, but why worship God?
Why worship God? Well, the truth is, we all worship something. You know, if worship is something we ultimately place high value on. You know, human nature is to worship something. You know, it might be a relationship, money, the pursuit of success. And actually, none of those things will really satisfy. Take the pursuit of money. You know, these people are so driven to have a comfortable life and enjoy luxuries. And then suddenly with this banking crisis, the economy, you know, so many people who were in one sense very wealthy, all of that's been taken away in an instant. You put all your ultimate value in a relationship, you know, sickness and suffering and people die, you know, we all die. Well, actually, when we worship God, it's the only thing I believe that will fully satisfy, will completely give us life. You know, Jesus, when he came to walk on the earth, he said, I've come to give life and life in all its fullness. And so I believe when we worship God, it's what we're created for. It's where we find life, excitement, joy, peace, happiness, and it's where we're changed and healed. So for me, that's why I think it's the most amazing thing to do.
So what's the definition of a successful worship event for you?
Well, I think a successful worship event has to be that Christ is glorified, that people actually leave an event not saying, oh, that worship leader is amazing, or oh, those songs are incredible, but actually saying, isn't God good? You know, I think our role as worship leaders, in one sense, is to be invisible. You know, you have to lead and be strong in that and use your gifts. But actually, there's a point where we need to get out of the way. Mm. And so the attention isn't on a band or on the stage, but it's on God.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's the challenge.
And how do you do that when you have a growing international profile?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real challenge. I mean, obviously, with that, any profile, you need that community around you and accountability to say, hang on a sec, Tim, that seemed a bit more about you than it did God. So those challenges. But I think it comes down to sort of, you know, what are we modeling here? You know, every you know, obviously creativity is an amazing thing. Lights and sound and music and senses can be used to direct people to God. And it's asking yourself that question, you know, did we try that thing to impress, or was it actually just to help people express who God is? And so it's just really searching your heart for those. What are your motives behind this? And I think it means as well in our worship, we do need space. You know, sometimes I think we can lead so strongly from the front that actually the congregation don't have that space to get involved themselves and actually take responsibility. I think sometimes you can see in the church, people turn up and you look at the band, you know, okay, you know, almost worship for me, just make it nice and easy for me. But there's an element of worship being a sacrifice. It's something we give, we come to present ourselves before God. And so we must always lead worship in a way that says to people, look, here you go, you've got to step into this and worship yourself.
Yes, it is your offering.
Exactly.
Can't be done for you. Open House is what you're listening to right around the nation, sitting here in the basement of the Acer Arena in Sydney, part of the Hillsong Conference with singer, songwriter, worship leader Tim Hughes. Give me some stories behind some of the well-known songs. I understand that there's some sort of story behind Happy Day.
Yeah, and the Happy Day was, it was interesting. We have a guy at our church called Graham Tomlin, who oversees a theological college training leaders and vicars, and he said, it was, excuse me, around Easter that he noticed at Easter time that a lot of the church began to sing the old sort of Easter hymns, and perhaps there's a lack of contemporary songs that really looked at sort of the resurrection. And you know, it got me thinking, and at the same time I'd been reading this book on Michelangelo, and there's a bit where he was getting frustrated with all the artists at the time who were continually painting Christ dead, you know, this crucifixion dead on the cross. And he said this line, said, you know, don't paint him dead, you know, paint him the Lord of life. Yeah. And so I just thought that was really great. So it's, okay, let me try and write a song that sort of paints Jesus, the one who's alive. And so obviously there's a sort of a nod to the old kind of gospel, Oh Happy Day song in there. But I mean, that's how it kind of, the story, the inspiration behind it, and then just, you know, a few melodies came and worked on it and worked on the lyrics and grabbed a few books on the kind of cross and resurrection. And yeah, I mean, just
That honing that we were talking about before, where you actually do the perspiration work.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, this song, the melody actually came pretty quickly, but it was just those lyrics. And, you know, I remember reading a book, had that line, you know, the empty cross, the empty grave, and just there's such powerful images, you know. And so it's, I think whenever you're writing lyrics, just to pull in as much info as possible and then sort of select great ideas.
What about Beautiful One, The Highest and the Greatest? Yeah, I Am to Worship. I mean, there are any stories behind any of those songs?
There's a few. I mean, like Beautiful One actually was, I remember I was in Australia. I was at Port Douglas, had a little holiday with a friend. And
we can take a lot of credit for your creativity, can't we?
I've actually written a few songs over in Australia. But that one, I was really struck. The passage in Isaiah, it talks about, you know, Christ having no beauty or majesty that anyone would have recognized walking around at the time, which seems so strange, where, you know, for centuries the church has been marveling at the beauty and the wonder and the transcendence of God. And so I just, you know, started singing that phrase, Beautiful One, Beautiful One. I mean, other songs, I can think of a song, God of Justice, which perhaps is a slightly different themed song for what I've written before, particularly when it comes to worship. A lot of the time you're sort of singing very vertical, responding to God's goodness. But actually at the same time as that, we live in a world which is being ravaged by poverty and abuse, corruption, and that theme of justice and a God of justice in a world that is so unjust for many people, you know. Was it 40,000 children every day dying from preventable diseases and this booming trade of trafficking, you know, sex workers? And it's just so wrong. And actually, I think the church, in the midst of enjoying all that God has done and singing about life and his love, remembers a world of pain and brokenness. And actually, it's those moments where you're so aware of, well, what can I do? What can I do? And you feel so helpless. But actually, I can look to a God who I believe is just, and have to have hope that he can make a difference and he can use me in it, whatever small or large way. And actually, we've just got to be obedient and we've just got to step out. We've just got to do something. Mm. You know, you might feel it's hardly anything, but just do something. As Mother Teresa was once, you know, someone said to her about her ministry, said, well, you know, what you're doing is like a drop in the ocean. And she just replied, well, the ocean's made up of many drops.
Yes.
And so I think that's the thing we've got to hold on to. So that song actually was is after being in Tanzania and meeting this lady in her village in Umbengetu. And hearing her story, she'd walk every day 10 hours to fetch water for her family, leaving at 12 at night, getting back 10 in the morning. And in her lifetime, her short lifetime, she had walked the equivalent of 3 times around the globe. Mm. It's just crazy, crazy things. And so that's kind of how this theme, we must go, live to feed the broken, stamp.
Yes, full on.
Yeah.
And when the final curtain is drawn, your end of days has come, what would you like to be remembered for? What would you like to leave behind you when you go?
I think in terms of leaving behind, I'd like to think that there are hundreds of worship leaders out there who are sort of thriving and flourishing in what they're called to do, and maybe, you know, I've had some small part in encouraging and cheering along. But I think at the end of the day, you want to be known as someone of integrity, humility, someone who's kind and gracious. I'd hate it if someone thought of me just, you know, he wrote a couple of good songs. Mm-hmm. I was a bit of an idiot. You know, I think that doesn't bring much glory to anyone. So I think it's for people seeing something in my heart that connected and encouraged.
Well, Tim Hughes, it's been great to talk to you.
Hey, thank you very much. Nice to chat.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.